Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, two films by Temujin Duran. One is based on Chris Hedges' work, so it's scary but true. The other is sweet and optimistic. It's all about the slogan, keep calm and carry on. I hope you'll stay tuned. If we wanted to be topical, we'd sure have plenty to talk about this week. For one, it's Labor Day. For another, it's the 50th anniversary of the Great March on Washington, and Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. I will note that all the mainstream corporate media that are now celebrating the march and praising King, these same media all denounced the march and denounced King while it was happening. The establishment media liked King even less a few years later when he came out strongly against the Vietnam War. Then they liked him least of all when he came out in favor of economic justice. You can always depend on the corporate media fearlessly championing the cause of established power. This is why, yet again, I felt a strong, sinking feeling of déjà vu all over again when I opened up the paper on August 29. There, on the editorial pages of East of the River's preeminent daily rag, there before me, all of the big guns were aimed at Syria. Both of the two editorial cartoons depicted President Assad as a homicidal psychopath. Below one cartoon, right-wing columnist David Ignatius has the headline, American credibility is at stake in Syria. To add a little balance, right-wing columnist Eugene Robinson's headline is, Assad must be punished. For yet another perspective, there's a guest editorial from the Worcester Telegram, headlined, Assad crosses the line. And for a change of pace, the paper's own editorial suggests that we not send the Marines to invade Syria. Instead, it says that we should fund the Syrian rebel forces that are trying to overthrow their country's government. It's Saddam Hussein all over again. Once again, the world has a new Hitler, and for the good of humanity, he must be overthrown immediately. It's uncanny how these new Hitlers keep emerging in countries that have lots of oil. First Saddam Hussein of Iraq, then Gaddafi of Libya, and now Assad of Syria. The idea of leaving Syria alone, the idea of letting Syria fight its own civil war without the United States intervening to support any side, apparently that course of action is so cowardly, so un-American, so unhelpful to corporate profits and the national security state, that the media are not even mentioning that as a possibility. This is a main point of essayist Chris Hedges. The collusion among the corporations, the corporate-owned news media, the government, and the government-owned military machine. This collusion brings us high corporate profits and constant war, and constant propaganda aimed at getting the people to think that constant war is perfectly normal, even desirable. Which brings us to today's feature. British photographer and filmmaker Temujin Duran has made a new film called Obey, How the Rise of Mass Propaganda Killed Populism. I found the film's video too artsy and distracting. The audio is very good. He reads selections from Chris Hedges' 2010 book, The Death of the Liberal Class, with some background music. It really puts today's newspaper headlines in context. We'll hear about half the movie today, the rest next week. And after we pause the film today, we'll lighten up a bit with a short film called Keep Calm. Here is Temujin Duran's Obey.
At any given moment, there is an orthodoxy, a body of ideas which it is assumed that all right-thinking people will accept without question. It is not exactly forbidden to say this, that, or the other, but it is not done to say it. just as in mid-Victorian times it was not done to mention trousers in the presence of a lady. We are an animal of habit. We live, fight, we bleed, and ultimately die for our habits. And those very habits shape the world around us and dictate how we might lead our lives. Before long, it soon becomes difficult to shift our behaviour from anything that we are not familiar with. This is a film about you, me, and the routine of obedience. It is an attempt to show what it means to be obedient in a time where our habits will ultimately shape a world in which we will no longer wish to live. The world as it is today is a place where companies have replaced countries. It is no longer the governments of countries that decide how things run and how people live. Instead, prime ministers have been replaced by directors, presidents with CEOs, parliaments with board members, and civil servants with business strategists. Dominant shareholders drive policies, not constituents. Former world leaders leave administrations to return to work for banks or giant investment firms, whilst we scout for the next generation of politicians from successful corporations, as if to imply that running a profitable company is like representing and deciding how people are to live their lives. It was not long ago that we saw big businessmen as people to be wary of, but somehow we have invited them to lead our countries. We unite behind brands, behind celebrities rather than behind nations. We have become more than nation states, we are corporation states. But how did this happen? At what point did business replace government? Unregulated capitalism had proved itself to be deeply flawed in the Great Depression. So why is it everywhere today? The war effort in the 1940s created a demand for big business to manufacture bombs, tanks, aircraft, and all manner of other war materials. Many companies adjusted their assembly lines to suit the needs of war. It was highly profitable. The war also unleashed radical new forms of mass propaganda that made it possible to engineer public opinion. There were revolutions in radio, cinema, photography, cheap mass publications and graphic art. This new propaganda exploited recent understandings of mass psychology and its pioneers like Sigmund Freud. Their works became the basis of communication and how individuals would interact with each other. War propaganda was churned out to rally people against a cause, to unite a country, and get citizens behind the war effort. As the war persisted, corporate profits boosted the US economy, and people began to readdress their criticism of the capitalist system. But the war also destroyed long-held values and self-perceptions that had once characterized contemporary life. It replaced them with fear, distrust, and the hedonism of the consumer society. Before the 1940s, there existed many mass movements enraged by the abuses of business. But this new propaganda drove any and all competing ideas and values underground. It vilified all who did not speak in the language of business and state. War propaganda not only bolstered support of the war, but also discredited dissidents and reformers as traitors. This rise of mass propaganda effectively killed populism. It began the death of the traditionally liberal forces that could offer a resistance to the capitalist machine. For this mass propaganda to work, the state could not do it alone. They hired corporations to help them talk to the people. The origins of all modern advertisement, all mass communications, has its foundations in war. And as the Second World War drew to a close, big business, anxious to maintain their high wartime profits, eagerly looked on to where the next conflict might emerge. To ensure financial security during the Cold War, giant US corporations began to split their manufacturing lines throughout the US to provide as many jobs in as many states as possible. In this way, they had a powerful influence over the government. No member of Congress would risk action against a corporation that provides high number of jobs to people in their constituency for fear of a voter backlash. So these businesses could essentially control the way in which Congress would make decisions, and choose how policy would be made to favour a corporate profit. This was a huge advance in the privatization of the US government, and from here on, priorities were increasingly made according to what was good for corporations rather than what was good for the people. Government media began to be replaced with corporate media. The quaint literary serials, local reports, town debates, and other forms of popular expression vanished from newspapers. It was replaced by celebrity gossip, the new angry rhetoric of the Cold War, and nationally syndicated columns. Papers became commercialized and centralized. The business of mass propaganda also brought in vast sums of advertising revenue to the media, but corporate and government propaganda narrowed the parameters of acceptable debate. It began the consolidation of the press by huge companies that would end with nearly everything we see, hear, and read disseminated from roughly half a dozen corporations. And for all of Rupert Murdoch's talk of ending the reign of the elites, he presided over the rise of media monopolization. It turned the news into the elite's echo chamber. Today, the privatization of government functions is enormous. In the United States, there are 18 military and civilian intelligence agencies, and 70% of their combined budget is outsourced to corporations. The Pentagon has privatized 69% of its workforce. The Afghanistan war effort is almost wholly privatized. Businesses now run wars and play more part in international conflicts than any state does. Corporations have 35,000 lobbyists in Washington and thousands more in state capitals that dole out corporate money to shape and write legislation. They use committees to solicit employees and shareholders for huge donations in order to fund business-friendly politicians. It is now a global practice, from the Politburo of China to the British Parliament. Labour leaders make lavish salaries and are considered junior partners within corporate capitalism, as long as they do not speak in the language of class struggle. Politicians, like generals, are loyal to the demands of the corporate state in power. They retire to become millionaires as lobbyists or company managers. Artists who use their talents to foster the myths and illusions that bombard our society live comfortably in the Hollywood Hills. Journalists who prize access to the powerful more than they prize the truth report lies and propaganda to propel us into wars around the world. Education has experienced a similar corporate takeover. Suffering from cuts in government funding, these institutions have transformed themselves into vocational schools. They have become breeding grounds for system managers trained to serve the corporate state. Many of these universities have swelled the budgets of their departments with millions in corporate money. University deans, paid enormous salaries as if they were heads of investment banks, are judged almost solely on their ability to raise money. The arts, just as hungry as the media for corporate money and sponsorship, refuse to address the social and economic disparities that create suffering for tens of millions of citizens. Commercial artists peddle mythical narratives, once propagated by corporations, self-help gurus, Oprah Winfrey and the Christian right, that if we dig deep enough within ourselves, focus on happiness, find our inner strength or believe in miracles, we can have everything we desire. We inhabit a system of inverted totalitarianism, the political coming of age of corporate power and the political demobilization of the citizen. Inverted totalitarianism differs from classical forms of totalitarianism, which revolve around a demagogue or charismatic leader. It finds its expression in the anonymity of the corporate state. The corporate forces behind inverted totalitarianism do not replace decaying structures with new revolutionary ones. They do not import new symbols or iconography as classic totalitarianism movements do. They do not offer a radical alternative. Corporate power claims to honor electoral politics, freedom, and constitutions, but these corporate forces corrupt and manipulate power as to make democracy impossible. We have yet to fully grasp that corporations are not concerned with the common good. They exploit, pollute, impoverish, repress, kill, and lie to make money. They throw poor families out of homes, let the uninsured die, wage useless wars to make profits, poison and pollute the ecosystem, slash social assistance programs, gut public education, trash the global economy, plunder the government treasuries, and crush all popular movements that seek justice for working men and women. They worship money and power. Capitalism is a revolutionary force that consumes greater and greater numbers of human lives until finally it consumes itself, leaving nothing but a dead zone. Corporations have seized power from the hands of the citizens, that the constitutions and all guarantees of personal liberty have become irrelevant, and that the phrase consent of the governed is meaningless. We experience nothing more than hollow acts of political theatre, all happening under the guise that democratic debate continue to exist, when in fact they do not. This is the world as it is. It is global and it is what we obey. The vague and unspecific promise of a better tomorrow is all that politicians have left to offer. It is only with this system of unfettered capitalism that they promise us the brighter future that awaits us, our brave new world. This is the future of the current system. This is the future of obedience. In the coming years, corporate power will continue to pollute and poison the ecosystem and propel us into a world where there will be only masters and serfs. There will be no check to a system of governance designed to enrich a tiny elite and plunder an entire planet. Liberals, socialists, trade unionists, independent journalists, and intellectuals, many of whom had once important voices in our society, will be banished and muzzled by corporate control through academia, culture, the media, and government. It will create a power vacuum filled by speculators, war profiteers, gangsters, and killers. A patriotic citizen, plagued by fear of job losses and possible terrorist attacks, will give their support to widespread surveillance and the militarized state. Military and intelligence agencies will be held above government, as if somehow they are not part of the government. The most powerful instruments of state control will effectively have no public oversight. The money that could be used to house and provide food and health to millions will be channeled to the development of increasingly sophisticated weaponry, like drones or AGM-144 Hellfire missiles, which suck the air out of victims' lungs. And yet the civic, patriotic, political language we will use to describe ourselves will remain unchanged. We will find our collective identity in the same national symbols. We will continue to deify our nation's founders, our leaders from history. But the countries we celebrate will become illusions. They will not exist. At first, people will indulge in the habit of intellectual avoidance. You will not want to appear to be political. You will be afraid of seeming controversial. You will want to keep a reputation for being balanced, objective, and moderate. Your hope is to be asked back, to consult, to be on a board or prestigious committee, and so to remain within the responsible mainstream. You will be employed. The mass propaganda used by the power elite will employ the talents of many people. And the work of justifying corporate power will continue to be carried out by an educated elite drawn from liberal thinkers. It is these people who will continue to create the jingles, advertising, brands, and mass-produced entertainment that keeps us trapped in a cultural and political illusion. The corporate salaries that these individuals earn will sap their moral and intellectual independence. It is one of the ironies of corporate control that the corporate state needs the abilities of intellectuals to maintain power. Yet outside of this role, it will continue its refusal to permit intellectuals to think or function independently. Hollywood, the news industry, and television will increasingly become instruments of inverted totalitarianism. They will saturate the airwaves with manufactured controversy, whether it is a political sex scandal, or the dispute between talk show hosts, or the extramarital affairs of celebrities. We will confuse knowledge with our potted responses to these non-events. Those who continue to resist will become members of the underclass. As long as they collaborate with the power elite and merge with the instruments of corporate oppression, there will be a few positions of comfort and privilege. But all those who seek to work as artists, journalists, professors, labor organizers, dissident politicians, or clergy will increasingly struggle without adequate health insurance or reliable incomes. Newspapers and print culture will disappear completely. supplanted by the blogosphere, the social media universe, and interactive television. Ironically, we will watch an increasingly number of so-called reality shows. But reality will leave our culture. It will be seeded for a culture of emotionally driven narratives, where facts and opinions are interchangeable. A fantasy reality, where meaning is distorted when words or sentences arrive in only bite-sized forms and are taken out of context alongside emotionally charged images. Words and images will dismember reality, and it will leave dissidents speaking in a language that will often be unintelligible to the wider society. As we shift from print to image, the old artifacts grounded in print will become as obtuse and unintelligible as hieroglyphics. News images will offer us an endless whirlwind of emotion, and at the same time create a historical amnesia. We will forget how we got here. A populace entranced by these fragments, pictures, videos, and spectacles, a populace that can no longer find the words to articulate what is happening to it, is cut off from rational discourse. We will express our reality through the use of selected and isolated facts, half-truths or lies that do not make sense. Illusion will become true. The great promise of the internet to open up dialogue, break down cultural barriers, promote democracy and unleash innovation and creativity is just a utopian dream. It will instead accelerate our division into antagonistic clans, where we are sucked into virtual tribal groups that chant the same slogans and hate the same enemies. Internet trolls will become digital crowd mobs. The web, like cable news outlets, will form anonymous crowds to vent collective rage, intolerance and bigotry. Utopian promoters of the internet will insist that the hive mind, a vast virtual collective, will propel us towards a brave new world. But this simply is not true. The internet is populated by the crowd and not the hive. And the crowd can turn into a mob all too easily. The internet will starve professional critics and artists. The only journalism and art that will endure will be that which draws advertising. The only income left for most of those who create will be earned through the self-promotion and the orchestration of celebrity. Writers, musicians, artists, journalists, and filmmakers must transform themselves into celebrities to earn money or vanish from the public consciousness. Cultural and artistic expression will be replaced by the tawdry, banal, and often idiotic distractions that draw huge numbers of views on YouTube. The internet will complete the final assault on the arts and intellectual inquiry. Any work that cannot gain corporate sponsorship or attract advertising revenue will be ignored. And funding a civilization through advertising is like trying to get nutrition by connecting a tube from one's anus to one's mouth.
And on that sad and depressing note, let us pause the film for now. More next week. That's Temujin Duran's film, Obey, featuring words from Death of the Liberal Class by Chris Hedges. I've been noticing here and there a poster. It has a crown and then five words, keep calm and carry on. Where the heck is that from? It sounds like a quote from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or maybe Monty Python. But how come I never heard the phrase until now? It turns out that it's a real slogan, invented in World War II, but never used. There's a charming story to it, and it's well told by Temujin Duran in another movie of his called Keep Calm.
In the spring of 1939, during the build-up to war with Germany, the British government commissioned a series of propaganda posters. These posters were intended to offer the public reassurance in the dark days that lay ahead. They were required to be uniform in style and were to feature a special and handsome typeface, making them difficult for the enemy to counterfeit. They used the crown of King George VI as the only graphic device and had just two colours. Of the three final designs that went into production, the first poster carried the slogan, "Your courage, your cheerfulness, your resolution will bring us victory." The second poster had the words, "Freedom is in peril, defend it with all your might." But the third design, of which over 2.5 million posters were printed, simply read, "Keep calm and carry on." The first two designs were distributed in September of 1939 and appeared up and down the country in shop windows and railway platforms. But the Keep Calm posters were held in reserve, intended for use only in times of crisis or invasion. In the end, the poster was never officially issued, and and it remained unseen by the public until a copy turned up more than 50 years later. It was found in a second-hand bookshop called Barter Books in the northeast corner of England. Barter Books was begun in 1991 by a couple, Stuart and Mary Manley. The building used to be an old Victorian railway station. Huge rows of stacked shelves now stand in the place where the tracks would have been, but the station's old tea rooms and waiting rooms are still there. It was in 2000 that Stuart found the poster in a box of dusty old books that had been bought at auction. Mary liked it so much she had it framed and put it up near the shop till, and it proved so popular with the customers that a year later they began to sell copies. Since that time, the poster has been reproduced, parodied, and trivialized, and has become a truly iconic image of the 21st century. It is hard to say exactly why such a phrase from a bygone decade would have so much appeal and resonance now. Its design is considered simple and timeless, and now commonly recognizable. However, it is perhaps the words on the poster that people find most enchanting. Like a voice out of history, it offers a very simple, warm-hearted message to inspire confidence in others during difficult times. And it's something that should never fade from fashion. To keep calm and carry on.
Words for today. Our show began with the words, "I have a dream." It moved on to obey, and ended with keep calm. If you're interested in the history of the past 50 years, there it is in a nutshell. So keep calm, and maybe someday we'll be able to have dreams again. Thanks for listening to New World Notes. For more stuff by Temujin Duran, see his website, studiocanoe.com. For more stuff from us, check out newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Until next week, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimi non carborundum, war is not healthy for children and other living things, and keep calm and carry on.